coming straight from the underground.
Welcome back to another Bruins post-game podcast. This is Matt Dolph, and I'm here with Ty Anderson, as I am on every single episode of the Sports Hub Underground. Ty, we're on fire here. This is our fifth podcast in the first 8 days of May already. We got Bruins pods. We got the regular episodes. I think we've officially lost it.
Yeah, well, it's playoff season, man. You got to block that shot. What would Derek Forbort do if he were a writer? He'd record five podcasts in 8 days.
Evil Derek Forbort be like, hit record and never stop. So apologies to anyone who's been waiting for bated breath for these post-game pods, but it's just a little different with home games. We need a little time because we have post-game stuff that takes place at the Garden, and then we have to travel home. We gotta get on the T, take the Uber, do whatever. We gotta get in duels with transients. We gotta, make sure we survive that. Ty made it home. He only had to knife a couple of homeless people. That's a joke, but he's home now. We got home, took a deep breath, had a glass of water, and now we can finally talk about the game. And it's exciting, Ty, because you and I never gave up on the series. We never said it was over. And lo and behold, this is a whole new series. I thought it was a new series after game three, but people were saying, no. It's not a series until they tie it. But you could go either way with that. You say, well, Carolina has to win game four, or, of course it's going to be a new series. And, back to square one, tie 2-2, Bruins seem to have all the momentum. And there are some emerging storylines from this game and the series. There's a story of the series, which is a little different from the story of this one game. But let's start with the story of the series right now, which is that Brad Marchand has awoken. Brad Marchand is the best, most accomplished scoring forward in between either team in this series, and 5 points today. Huge goal to start the third period, an absolute missile on a 5-on-3. You give him an open look at the net and he can snipe it with the best of them. And Brad Marchand has awoken, and it seems hard to stop right now. We'll see how it goes when it gets to Carolina. But to me, that's the biggest story of the series right now, is that the Bruins stars, especially Marchand, have come alive.
Yeah, I mean, that had to be your greatest fear if you were Carolina, right, is that he gets on the board. We talked about this after game three. He gets on the board, and now you're like, okay, now that's one more threat we have to worry about, if you're on the Carolina bench, because up until that point, it was Hall and DeBrusk were the two best wingers for the Bruins. And if that's the case, you're probably going to win against the Bruins more often than not. But between Marchand and Pastrnak waking up, Marchand, I mean, today was a takeover game for him in so many ways, I thought.
The reunited perfection line has sort of taken over the series, it feels like. I mean, we'll see how it goes. They're going back on the road, but it feels like they've just taken over.
Yeah, and they'll get a heavier dose of Jordan Staal's line down in Carolina, of course. But again, I mean, these guys are running their set plays. I mean, that Pastrnak goal to make it 4-2, that's a set play they've run countless times. And it was executed perfectly. Like
the absolutely perfect.
We've seen it before. We've seen it dozens and dozens of times. But it was like Carolina didn't do a lot of their homework on the pre-scouting and what this.
Yeah, there was no
to run.
Right. They didn't give him much space on that play, but it was just a perfectly threaded pass by Marchand. Those two are just locked in right now. And, it's like I guess it took a little bit for them to get their, get their chemistry back, work off the rust as a group. But, they are back. they scored two goals right off the faceoff basically today. That other goal, the Bergeron goal, that wasn't really a set play, was it? Is it really a set play to we'll fire it behind the net, you go retrieve it, and then someone will pot it home? Like, that's sort of what happened.
I think it was a set play that broke a little bit and then became something else, really. But it came But again, that speaks to the idea of what these guys, how well they know one another, what their tendencies are, where they want passes, where they that's kind of how I think it became a set play, if you will. But it wasn't. Yeah. I don't think that was necessarily by design. The ultimate look they got off it. But again, their arsenal is just, they go 10 deep, I think, in terms of the plays they can run, what they want to do. I thought today was probably their best coached game in a long time. I thought, personally, the way that they attacked this team without having McAvoy, without having Lindholm still. And I'm sure we'll talk about that. But like, this was,
You've talked about like getting the right matchups and putting them in the right matchups when they have a face off in the offensive zone. So I think that they've really they've taken advantage of that on the home ice, I think.
Yeah. And really what's crazy about today, right, is that they're shorthanded defensively. Their top minute guy on the back end, just over 20 minutes, 2016, Connor Clifton. Like they didn't rely on just one pairing or one guy. I mean, they stuck to their game plan and they said, we're going to do this and this is how we're going to win the game. And there's a lot of other coaching things they did along the way that I'm sure we'll get to. But, you know, it's just this was, I think, their best coaching performance of the season or of the series, rather. And I would say that reuniting that top line has worked wonders for Bruce Cassidy so far.
Yeah. No, I mean, we can talk about the defense. That's one of the emerging storylines from this one game. We can start with the Bruins storylines from this game, which is the defense was obviously a huge one. And I mean, shame bells for Charlie McAvoy for getting COVID, which I assume is what happened. I mean, you're missing two games and you had a chance to go down 3-1 in the series. It sounds like he's going to miss game five as well. So, I mean, not a good look for McAvoy, but this speaks to their resilience and the coaching that they were able to overcome it today. And yeah, and it was interesting that the Bruins had four guys with over 19 minutes of ice time, Clifton leading the way with a little over 20 minutes. So really balanced effort. And I think Bruce sort of said it when they were talking to him in the middle of the game to ESPN. It's like, well, you know, they're not Charlie McAvoy. I think that's basically the story of it. It's like, none of you are Charlie McAvoy, so don't try to be Charlie McAvoy. Just play your game. And I think you saw that between Riley. We're talking about how well he's skating and how active he's been. Clifton is a little ball of energy, as always. And Forbert and Brown did a good job staying at home. And so overall, I thought it was a good game. They had a couple of breakdowns on the two Carolina goals. But, I mean, how can you not feel good about that, the resilience and that balanced overall team effort on defense without their top two defensemen? You have to feel good about that.
Yeah, the Josh Brown experience was an adventurous one. I there were moments where I was like, this man is terrifying in all the wrong ways right now.
I feel like now is a good time to put him in there. Like you have to put him in there against Toronto or Tampa. That is like the ultimate horror movie, I think, scenario. But
this team had 90 in 2011. You had to go to 90 when you didn't have Chara in 2011. It was like, this is not what we want to see right now.
Yeah.
So but everyone did their job. Like Josh Brown had some big moments on the PK. He was good when the net was empty for Carolina, 6-on-5, got some good clears. It's funny because I think, you know, you kind of saw the way they deployed the Carlo Grizzlick pairing today was a lot of offensive minutes, which makes sense because it's Grizzlick. But, you know, that really sort of relied on Forbert and Clifton to be your defensive rocks. And I thought they were fantastic today. They may not show it in the results. You know, I don't know what their final stats were in terms of as a line or pairing, but I thought they were value add every time they're out there. And Forbert against Svechnikov is not a matchup that I thought I'd be like, the Bruins might have an edge here, because Svechnikov is he's really, you can bother him really easily. And it feels like Forbert knows how to bother him just by being Derek Forbert. So, you know, we'll see how that changes when the series shifts back to Carolina, but everyone 1-6 on the back end did their job today. I thought some hairy moments just based on the personnel. But it didn't submarine them. It didn't sink them. Like they were great, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, look, you got your 3-8 defensemen out there. You're going to have some moments against a deep team that's fully healthy like Carolina. So you're going to have moments, but I think overall it was just very impressive the way they were able to hold their own as a unit. And yeah. And just big picture overall team thing. And we can sort of transition into the Carolina side of this game. Is that we were saying going into game three, it's like, you got to start playing with a little more of an edge. You got to start, you know, pushing back against them in all the little ways. And you have a chance to get into their head a little bit. And it feels like Bruins are getting into their heads a little bit. Cause remember, this is a team that, you know, they're sort of snake bit against the Bruins in the playoffs, off to a good start in the series, but you know, Bruins have got two back against them. And, you know, they sort of melted down. I mean, we can get into all the individual incidents, but feels like the Bruins are creeping into their heads a little bit.
Yeah, and I think in some instances a team takes on the personality of their coach, and Brind'Amour is just losing his mind every time the team is called for a penalty. And you know, I would argue that that challenge, I understand why he did it, because goaltender interference is a coin flip. Like, no matter what, it's a coin flip. But that failed challenge, I thought, completely turned the tenor of this game around.
Yeah,
and from that point on, the Hurricanes were just a mess.
It totally did. I thought, yeah, this is my thought on the challenge. I thought it was a terrible decision. I thought he cost his team the game with that decision. It was the tying goal. So you're not chasing it yet. You can, and there's like a minute left in the period at that point. You know, let it, if it's not, it wasn't like obvious. I thought it wasn't obvious interference. And the most important thing was the call on the ice was good goal. You know, that was like Rod Brind'Amour was saying after the game. It's like, well, how is that a goal? But in the first game, when, you know, Niederreiter and Jordan Staal are poking at the pads, and they said no goal. Well, the difference there, Rod Brind'Amour, is that the call on the ice was no goal. So that's right. The call on the ice being no goal, you can argue with. But that's way different from the call being good goal, and then you have to overturn the call. And like, you look at the replay, and yeah, Jake DeBrusque looks to push Antti Raanta's pad a little bit, but Brett Pesce sort of, they do like a little pinwheel move. They sort of like tag team Raanta's pad at the exact same time, and the puck is loose. And I thought the rule book, our friend Billy Jaffe tweeted like the exact rule, which is like, if the puck's loose and it's a rebound and everybody's going for it at the same time, it's basically all incidental contact. It's hard to rule goaltender interference there. So you could argue they made the right call to just say good goal. And it's so hard to overturn it. I get it, it's a coin flip, but it's got to be conclusive. And they didn't have enough evidence to overturn that. And it was just too big of a risk. So he loses the challenge. They get another penalty on top of that. And then Sebastian Aho, a minute later, you know, busts Patrice Bergeron open like Stone Cold at WrestleMania 13. And so they're off and running. They get the 5-on-3. They score early in the third period. And like, the whole game has tilted into the Bruins' favor. And I think just off that challenge. And, you know, who knows what happens if they don't challenge it and they just play it out from there. But it was only a tie game there. And I think he put his team in a bad spot there, and they cracked.
Yeah, I mean, it started with that, and some of the penalties that they were committing, I mean, they're obvious penalties. The Svechnikov cross-check on Forbert, the ref is standing 3 feet to the left. Like, what do you – pick a spot. Pick a better spot, dude. You know, the puck over the glass penalty, D'Angelo's penalty in the third period, like the Aho's penalty, the high sticking, like, these are dumb penalties. Brainless hockey, just not smart. Yeah. As a road team, especially when you have a team on the ropes. The Bruins should have been on the ropes today.
Right. Like, they went down 1-0 again, and then they went down 2-1. They came back from two separate deficits in this one.
And the trend has held true. Now, I know it doesn't necessarily, this isn't a shocking trend per se, but the team that has scored two goals in a row has won all four games. Score two goals in a row and you make the other team play your game. Neither one of these teams wants to play the other team's game. So, right. That's the formula. And if you're going to gift them power plays, you know, the Bruins gifted Carolina power plays in game two, and then the Carolina Hurricanes gifted Bruins power plays in game four. You're playing in the other team's hands. And then now you're chasing, and neither team wants to chase. Neither team is particularly good at chasing. So it just, that holds true. But I think that Carolina really shot themselves in the foot again and again and again today as well.
So, I mean, yeah, we talked about like the over officious nature of the referees early in the series, and we thought it was ridiculous how many power plays and how many 5-on-3s Carolina was getting in game two. Do you think this was a little different because of the penalties you're talking about, just dumb penalties? Did you even mention D'Angelo cross checking Curtis Lazar right in the face?
Like, yeah, I thought they were playing dumb.
I thought they were playing dumb. There are a couple of, like, the Bruins have had their share of bad penalties too. Like, Mike Riley can't stop high sticking people.
Dr. Hook over there.
Right. Seriously, Dr. Claw, whatever you want to call him. But yeah, like, just, yeah, undisciplined. And like, and it's almost like it came from the head coach down, you know, Rod Brind'Amour, with the lack of discipline on the challenge. And then the lack of discipline just in general with the Hurricanes. It feels like they unraveled a little bit. And, you know, I don't want to say like it's anywhere close to like the Bruins have a big advantage in the series now or anything like that. They have the momentum, but you know, Carolina's going to be at home. They did get off to a good start today. They did have two leads in this game today, game four. So we'll see if they can regroup. But you know, this is we see what they're capable of when you start like dictating the game towards them.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. Like, this team is not built to play from behind. I mean,
no,
they're just not, right? Like, they want to play that possession game that grinds you down. Now, the problem is when you're trailing, you need goals. You can't just cycle and cycle and cycle. Like, you need to funnel some pucks through and get some shots on goal. And we talked about this before, but the commitment to shot blocking these last two games has been so evident. I mean, it is just, it's a fantastic effort from the Bruins, really helping out their young goaltender, I think, and really making it so Swayman doesn't have to make crazy saves. You know, he doesn't have to be diving all over the place because there's chaos in front of him. It's as controlled as it can be against this team, I think. And, you know, the discipline, yeah, you're mentioning the 5-on-3s. I mean, they're making them easy for them. The puck over the glass leads to the first 5-on-3.
That was, what the hell was going on with Vincent Trocheck on that play?
I, you know, it,
yeah, he no, did not game, need to even.
The team has one.
Like, it absolutely didn't. There's no need for it.
No, it was unbelievable. I mean, it was basically out by the neutral zone, and he does that. Like what?
There's nobody in front of him. Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, and then the Aho one is what leads to the second extended 5-on-3 for the Bruins. So, I mean, those are gimmies. Those are easy calls if you're the officials. It's not like over penalizing one team out of the scrum. Those are automatics, right? Puck over the glass, high stick with blood. I mean, that's automatic for them. So.
Right.
Lack of control, lack of discipline. It really feels like, I don't know, like it's almost like they got too psyched up because McAvoy and Lindholm were out. They're like, this is going to be easy. We got to do this. But again, games three and four, the downfall of Carolina has been accelerated by special teams, whether it's the PK or the power play. I mean, they went 0-for-5 on the power play in game three. And then today they allowed the Bruins to hang in it, stick around because of their penalties. So just, they are, when they are forced to play a different kind of game than what they're used to, the results do not favor them.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
You touched on something that I wanted to say, is that Rod Brind'Amour, he seems to be blaming the officials every time the things don't go his way officiating wise. But like you said, like the only penalties that really mattered were no brainers. It was a failed challenge and a high stick where you busted the guy open. That's automatic, obvious penalties. And those are the penalties that swung the game. So it's like, I can't stand them when they, you know, when they complain about the referees, when anyone complains about the referees. I know that, like, the Bruins aren't immune to that. And I know Bruce Cassidy's done it before, but to me, Bruce really only does it when he's like fed up and it's like an endless string. And it's just like, it's like a straw that breaks the camel's back with him. Brind'Amour seems like he does it every game. Like he has a problem with something after every game. And it's like, he's not looking at it logically where it's like, you know, why didn't they call this a goal? Why did they call that a goal? It's like, okay, maybe you want more consistency in the calls made on the ice, but that they didn't force you to challenge that.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So it's like at some point you gotta do the old cliche. And that starts with me. It starts with me, you know, I don't know if we've heard that out of his mouth yet.
No. And I think a big problem has just been, I mean, obviously like their power plays, they're getting kind of crushed here by the Bruins PK right now. So
yeah, they've been great last couple.
Yeah, so that's an issue as well. But you know, I also wonder too, going back to Ranta. I mean, we talked about this, right? That they could, if they go back to Ranta, like, do they expect to get game one Ranta? Because I don't know if that's the real answer. I think today is kind of closer to what anti Ranta is and has been throughout his career. So what do you do now? Do you go back to Kochetkov for game five? And if you do, are you playing into the Bruins' hands by
right?
Basically displaying that you have no faith in either goaltender like that. Like that's a big one that I wonder about too. So I just feel like Brind'Amour is the series switched to Boston. Bruins went to that back to that first line with Pastrnak on the right side, and then the series flipped, and I feel like the Hurricanes have been chasing the Bruins ever since.
Yeah, absolutely. What's up with Freddie Anderson? We haven't heard anything about him. I thought he had a chance to come back in the middle of the series.
So I don't believe he's actually had a practice with the team yet. I believe he's skating on his own, but he's not practicing with the team. So
at this point, at best, he's back for like game seven or something, if it gets to that point.
Let's say the Bruins steal one in Carolina. Do you put Freddie Anderson in for game six in Boston? And is that a great spot for him? I mean, the guy's lost two elimination games already in Boston, and this time he's coming off an injury. I don't know if that's a great landing spot for him. So they get the work cut out for them here. But I think as long as Raanta or Kochetkov are net for the Hurricanes, the Bruins have a chance, no matter where the game is, Boston, Carolina. I can see that the Bruins are starting to get a book on both guys. Keep in mind that game one was the Bruins' first look at Raanta in almost 6 years. They had not seen him since November 2016, before game one of the series.
And he was on like the Blackhawks or something.
On the Rangers then.
Rangers.
And that was the game Pastrnak, I think, got suspended because of a hit in that game on Dan Girardi. That's how long ago it was. Dan Girardi's been out of the league now for a long time.
I confuse Raanta with Antti Niemi, the two Antties.
Well, Raanta was on the Blackhawks.
Okay.
He was.
Okay.
He was Corey Crawford's backup for a little while.
My brain's doing something.
He's been with Chicago, New York, Arizona, now Carolina. So he's bounced around a little bit, but they hadn't seen him in almost 6 years, right? When they saw him in game one. So you pick up on the tendencies. They obviously picked up on some tendencies with Kochetkov. So, I mean, Freddie Anderson, I think, is the guy that you're going to try to rush back into play now. But the Bruins, my understanding is that Charlie McAvoy will not be available for game five. They're circling game six as a hopeful for him. That would be in line with the NHL's 5-day isolation period. He can also test out. He needs two negatives within 24 hours. If those things happen, he'll be good to go. But as of right now, I can't see him being cleared for game five. He would need to have two negative tests basically between now and Tuesday morning, and then catch a flight to Raleigh. So I just don't see it happening personally. So
especially if it's JetBlue.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. Gotta get a Spirit. You know what? You gave him $72 million. Maybe you can see if the Jacobs want to lend him a private jet or something, if he can test out. I mean, who knows? But ultimately, I don't think he's going to be available for game five.
What about Lindholm? Do you know anything about his status? So
Lindholm is, I believe the plan is to see if he can practice tomorrow. If he can practice Monday, get a skate in, feel okay, right? Not have any residual after effects come Monday night or Tuesday morning, he has a good chance of playing in game five. Saw him at the Garden Friday night. He worked out yesterday at the Garden. Cassie said he believes he skated this morning on his own. So again, he's taking strides, but he needs that practice or that skate with the team to really kind of get a feel for where he's at, because you don't want to rush him back.
No.
And you want to make sure that he's okay. Cause this is something that's happened before where they've had a guy coming back from an upper body injury. Let's just say it's that. And he skates a few hours later. He's like, I don't feel so good. Right. I'm getting a headache. I have whatever sensitivity to light, whatever the case may be. So he's got to get in a skate. Right. And I think tomorrow practice is the best way, because a morning skate, not a lot of physicality, not a lot of bumping. You know, you kind of have a hard time getting a feel for how that's going to translate to gameplay. But a Monday practice, I mean, this team practices hard, right? Like they battle. It's not about the length of practice or the amount of practice. It's about the minutes and how you use them. So if he's there tomorrow, it could bode well for Tuesday night in Raleigh.
Okay, so yeah, we're tied 2-2, and now it's a best of three. Two of those games are in Carolina, so the Bruins have to win a game in Carolina. It's obviously going to be a lot harder. The matchups are going to be in Carolina's favor. I imagine it's going to be tougher for that top line. I mean, tell me if you think they're going to keep that the perfection line together or not, but I think it's going to be a big game for the middle six forwards, especially maybe the Taylor Hall line. They'll get the better matchups as far as who they're going up against defensively, and it's probably going to be on them to score, especially if the Bergeron line gets slowed down, gets shut down again. Maybe Jeremy Swayman has to steal them a game, but if they win a game in Carolina, whether it's game five or game seven, how do you see it happening?
Well, I think tomorrow, or I'm sorry, Tuesday, you're going to see Jordan Staal against that first line. So, and based on the shuffling that we saw today, you saw a lot of mixing and matching in both games three and four. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Pastrnak double shifted a little bit here. You put him back with Haller and Halla, if that's where you want to go, and you try to get him away from it because he's the most dynamic player. You know, Marchand is used to facing other teams' top lines, their top defensive forward, their top checking line, whatever the case may be. You know, Pastrnak, if you can free him up and get him away from that matchup a little bit, I think they wouldn't be against that. And especially look at their right side right now. I mean, you got DeBrus playing his off wing. He's been good, so you're not going to worry about him. But then you have Craig Smith, who's been quiet, and you have Chris Wagner, who is basically readjusting, right? And you also have Thomas Nosek playing right wing as well. So they will find opportunities to double shift David Pastrnak, I think, in game five to try to free him away from that matchup and get him some minutes with guys he's produced with, whether it's Taylor Hall and Halla or Bergeron and Marchand. So I expect a lot of minutes for Pastrnak in game five and down in Raleigh.
I like the idea of, you know, mixing and matching whatever line he's on. When they get an offensive zone start, go for those set plays based on whoever's out there, based on the matchups and that sort of thing. So I like that idea. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Well, the other thing to mention too is like, so they have more set plays for Pastrnak, obviously, just in general. But set plays with DeBrus, a little bit different because you have a lefty, a righty, and a lefty. So it all kind of depends where the faceoff is for them. But the bag of tricks, there's way more in the bag of tricks when it's Pastrnak there with the right-handed Bergeron and Marchand lefty on the left wing there. So something to watch as well, where the faceoff is in terms of how they utilize that matchup.
One more thing. Do you think Tony DeAngelo gets in trouble for throwing his stick at Marchand at the end there?
No, he's just a big piss baby. I mean, there's nothing to like about that guy.
The ultimate piss baby move.
Yeah, geez, you want to talk about a guy who's like Marchand wormed his way inside his brain without even trying. Yeah. Really,
he has borrowed in there, man. Lemmy winks over here,
and he absolutely at the end of the first period said, "You're racist. You are racist."
Oh yeah, I saw that. Yeah, that was pretty good.
The best part is he's saying it, and then he says to the ref, "He is like he's looking for the ref."
What? He is. D'Angelo probably got his 1850s Southern literature waiting for him in the penalty box, some little bathroom reading for him there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that guy's
not a great guy.
Yeah. I mean, he'd be a perfectly fine defenseman if he didn't act like such a clown, you know, obviously off the ice, but on the ice too. And it's like he completely, you know, he lost it. So
I can't believe that. I mean, I get it because he's offensively capable, but I can't believe Brindamore didn't sit him after that penalty against Lazar. You're down by two. You're chasing the game. You're putting some pressure on them. The Bruins don't have McAvoy. They don't have Lindholm. And you take that selfish penalty. That is one of the worst
I've ever seen. Yeah, against Lazar. You're taking yourself off the ice. You're taking yourself off the ice over Lazar.
And I love
Evan Lazar of CLNS Media out there on the ice getting cross-checked.
I loved Lazar going, "What are you doing after that? Like why are you coming at me? What am I doing?
What's wrong with you, dude? I'm a stiff. Like, what are you doing? Why are you coming at me of all people?"
No disrespect
to Curtis Lazar, but that was good. No, that was good by him to get under his skin.
He's gonna make money this offseason. He's been fantastic in this series, I think. Like he's been great.
Yeah. So good game today. Both games at home, I think he played really well.
Yeah, and he's got the jam. He's got the jump. You know, but DeAngelo, I mean, geez, man, could you be any more like just feeble minded? Like unbelievable.
Complete jackass. If anyone did that on the Bruins, he would rightfully be called out for being a jackass. So,
It's funny. I cover the games and Connor's there as well. Connor Ryan, Boston Sports Journal. And Connor had an excellent point that I was like, this is so true. He goes, imagine what we'd be saying about the Bruins if the Hurricanes were missing Slavin and Pesci. and they committed like 19 penalties in a row. We'd be killing the Bruins, being like, what are you doing? Yeah. Why are you like this?
Yeah, complete meltdown by Carolina. All right. Well, we've covered everything from this game and the series going forward. Very exciting times, Ty. We got a very compelling series on our hands. Bruins battled their way back in it. So good times. Everything is awesome for the time being. We'll see how it is in 48 hours from now. But you have any closing thoughts for us?
No, I just think that game five is going to be, I think it's going to be an awesome game. I think that you have two teams here that I think they're fully engaged. The emotional intensity is where it ought to be for the playoffs this time of year. And now you've got two coaches now that are in a game of chess. You know, who's going to win? So I'm very excited to see what adjustments that are made for game five. Curious if Hampus Lindholm gets in. That'd be a huge get for the Bruins because as good as Josh Brown played, I don't know if you want 15 minutes of Josh Brown against Carolina's top line if they have last change. So that's something to consider. So I think that game five should be a doozy. I can't wait.
Yep. Can't wait. All right. Thanks for listening. If you've listened to this whole postgame show, thanks. I love you all. We love our faithful listeners. We hope you're enjoying our postgame pods during the Bruins playoff run, and we appreciate your patience waiting for the home game pods to come out. But you can get us at 985thesportshub.com every single episode. And we'll have a new episode later this week, regular episode. Probably try to talk about things other than the Bruins because there are other things going on.
I disagree.
In the Boston sporting world, plenty of hockey talk still coming your way. And you can get us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google. And we'll keep them coming. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.